This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, August 19th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. What makes a currency manipulator? Is China's attempt to prop up its currency a threat to the United States? Is it just a response to punitive tariffs imposed by the Trump White House? Cato's Dan Eikenson makes the case. For the benefit of listeners and for your humble host, what makes a country, or at least the central bank of that country, a currency manipulator?
Currency manipulation involves actions taken by policymakers to suppress the value of their currency. It's often done, presumably, to secure trade advantages, to make it easier for your exporters to price competitively abroad, and to make it more difficult for foreign producers to sell their products in your own market. But really, currency manipulation can work in many different dimensions and many different ways. But the one that is most relevant for the policy discussion we've been having concerns interventions to prevent currencies from appreciating.
So the Trump administration has labeled China a currency manipulator. What does that mean as a matter of policy?
Well, in 1988, a trade law was passed, the Omnibus Trade Act of 1988, which requires the Treasury Department to issue semi-annual reports on the currencies of major economies. And the last time any country was labeled a currency manipulator was back in the early 90s, I think 93, and it was China. Since then, it hasn't labeled China or anybody else a currency manipulator. And throughout the early 2000s and in more recent years, there have been assertions that the Chinese have been manipulating their currency. But the Treasury Department did not come to that conclusion. They have a variety of criteria that they use. But to answer your question, what does it mean from a policy perspective? I'd say not very much. The law says that if a country is labeled a currency manipulator, that the U.S. government should seek to remediate the problem either bilaterally or through the International Monetary Fund. And given that we are in the midst of a pretty heated trade war with China right now, imposing sanctions on one another, it doesn't seem to me that this matters all that much. It's just an act of name calling, I think, as The Economist put it. And it really undermines the U.S. Treasury's credibility because they have not, nothing has changed. In fact, the Chinese are engaging in the opposite of currency manipulation. They've been trying to prop up the value of their currency as it has been depreciating, part and parcel, or particularly because of the trade war. The fact that there are tariffs imposed on Chinese products is encouraging companies that are invested in China to divest and to go elsewhere. So there is there's a sell-off of Chinese currency, and the Chinese want to prop up the value of their currency because in the long run they really do want to be have a world reserve currency, sort of like the dollar. There's a lot of prominence to that, and they are. They've been spending their currency reserves, their dollar-held assets, to buy RMB or yuan. They have two names for the currency on the open market. And the administration decided to label China a currency manipulator simply because it stopped intervening in the market to prop up the value of the RMB. So the Trump administration saw that the RMB, the pressure on the RMB pushed it down to a value that that it hadn't seen in about 10 years, which was more than 7 RMB to the dollar, and said, oh, the Chinese are manipulating because they're no longer propping up the value of their currency. This decision came as a one-off. It was not part of the semi-annual reporting process. The first report came out in May. The next report comes out in November. This was just the product of Trump pressuring Treasury Secretary Mnuchin to label China a currency manipulator. Where we go from here, I'm not particularly sure.
And as we were talking before we started recording here today, this isn't new. This goes back to, in your world, at least 2003.
Yeah. So I've been at Cato since October 2000. And I remember being at the WTO ministerial meeting in Cancun when the Doha round was launched. And the news, the breaking news of the day, as besides the fact that the talks were breaking down, was a piece of legislation introduced by Senator Schumer, which would impose a 27.5% tariff on all imports from China because the Chinese currency was undervalued and they were intentionally undervaluing it. That 27.5% tariff wasn't the product of any, you know, scientific research. It was the midpoint in the range of estimates of how undervalued the Chinese currency was. So economists from various institutions around the world, the range was something like 10 to 45% undervaluation. So Schumer took the midpoint of that and introduced legislation. That legislation didn't make it through. I think Congress saw it as a massive tax on U.S. consumers and rejected it. I think in the next Congress, it was reintroduced with Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. It still met the same fate. And there have been all sorts of policy proposals in the United States over the years to deal with currency manipulation. The most recent one that seems to be gaining credibility again is to treat it as a subsidy under the U.S. countervailing duty law. I think that's a terrible idea. I don't think that the Commerce Department is capable of measuring that in an objective way. And in fact, you know, the fact that economists, renowned economists from around the world, can't agree on you know, what the value should be, suggests that there are many ways to approach this. And I think that the Commerce Department would do it in a protectionist kind of way. So that said, with respect to, you know, when we took economics in college, you know, we learned that currency values do influence trade flows. An undervalued currency, you know, sort of subsidizes your exports and taxes imports. That's true, of course, but I think that effect has been mitigated somewhat by the fact of globalization. Because China has been an export processing economy for so many years, it imports a large chunk of the value of what it exports, and then it just ends up adding a little bit of value in China and, you know, in assembling operations and things like that. So when the Chinese currency is appreciating, which is what U.S. policymakers have wanted as a means to correct this trade imbalance, what happens is that the cost of the inputs that it purchases from abroad go down. So they can reduce their cost of production and therefore reduce their price for export and keep the market share in the United States. We've seen that between 2005 and 2013, that the Chinese currency appreciated 38% in real terms, yet the bilateral deficit between the United States and China increased 46% during that period. So we saw exports increase to China, which, you know, the textbooks would predict, but the value of imports continued to rise. So that speaks to the Chinese capacity to lower their costs of production, lower their prices, and it also speaks to demand in the United States. There's not a great deal of elasticity for demand. Americans depend on imports from China, so they can't really substitute away very easily. So they will incur the higher prices.
You know, if you're a U.S. exporter, why wouldn't you welcome the development of China spending down its reserves and freeing up a lot of dollars and thus trying, at least attempting, I guess, in a way to drive down the U.S. dollar?
Yeah. So we are having a broader conversation in the United States now about whether the dollar is too strong. The dollar is the predominant world reserve currency. Most transactions, international transactions, occur in dollars. Foreigners demand U.S. dollar-denominated assets. So as a result, there is always upward pressure on the dollar. And as a result, we have run trade deficits year after year after year since 2 years after Nixon took us off the quasi-gold standard in 1971. That's because foreigners were looking for investments that were safe, and the dollar-denominated investments became the predominant place to save your money, and And so as a result, exporters have complained over the years that, hey, we can't really compete in foreign markets because the dollar is so strong. That may be the case for commodities, products that can't be differentiated by quality or, you know, specific features of the product. So agricultural products, maybe. But for machinery and equipment and, you know, technology-oriented products, I don't think that's so much the case because there are perceived technology differences. Anyway, exporters would like to see a weaker dollar so that they can compete more abroad, specifically and particularly in these commodities. But there are huge benefits to having a strong dollar. There are incredible benefits to being the government that prints the most desired reserve currency. And we don't seem to, politicians, when they push for measures that they think are going to correct a trade imbalance, don't seem to recognize the privilege. I think it's the term that was once used by a French diplomat, the exorbitant privilege of printing the world's reserve currency. If we keep trying to undermine the dollar, we will no longer have that privilege, and we will start to feel the effects of this, and policymakers will be compelled to make decisions that are more fiscally responsible.
Dan Eikensen directs the Herbert A. Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. You can learn more at cato.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.